Hello, and welcome to another episode of Candid, where we have real talks with real people. My name is Anise, and I'm here with Bethany, and our co-hosts, Shanae and Dudley, will be popping in a little bit later. If you've been keeping up with the show, this month's topic is orange economy / creative economy, and today will be the last of our four-part series on the orange economy. So we've saved the best for last. Today's guest is Taran Bryce, an acquaintance of mine. He does poetry. I actually worked with Taran for a bit, and in the brief amount of time, I realized that he's very, for lack of better words, very poetic. I feel like that's a cliche to say, but he's very imaginative in his blog posts and his poetry and even his spoken words. So I'm rambling on, but you can introduce yourself, give us a brief description of what you do, how you got into it, stuff like that.
Okay, wow. Thank you. Very poetic. Thank you. First and foremost, thank you for having me. Poetry. I guess I've been writing poetry since I was like 12, really. Little bits and pieces here and there, but like to do it on a professional level, I would say I didn't get the inspiration until like the world shut down and we entered, you know, the whole pandemic in 2020. And that's where I got the idea. One day, like just going to the grocery store trying to procure like water and supplies because it was very Hunger Games back then. It was very Hunger Games. Yeah, very that. Everybody went for tissue and like nobody was getting soap. But anyway, back to the point. I just got the idea. I was just like, wow, it'll be cool to kind of like immortalize this moment and, you know, kickstart my indie author career. And so that's when I debuted my first poetry book, My So-Called Quarantine. I put it up on Amazon. It was like a number one new release in Caribbean and Latin American poetry. So that was really cool. That kind of kickstarted everything. And then from the poems, I went on and made like these little performance art, visual art motifs of some of the poems. It's kind of like how music artists would like put on an album, but then they'll select singles and do visuals for that. It's very that. So I did two of my favorite poems from My So-Called Quarantine. I did Lavender. I did Poignant Piñata. And from there, I just kind of, you know, continued to promote the book and stuff like that. More recent, 2021, around Boxing Day, I released a chapbook, a poetry chapbook called Litmus Paper Blue. It's really chapbook is just like a shortened version of my poetry, of like a full-length poetry book. Litmus Paper Blue, released that around Boxing Day. That also went number one in Latin American poetry on Amazon. So that's cool.
Honestly, you've been on ZNS.
I hope this would like be a kickstart into, you know, getting more exposure for the work. Yeah,
we're the first. Yeah. You know.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
I appreciate that. I'm very yes. I am very well. Thank you.
Thank you. That is up in there.
Yes. But writing is just like my thing. I had a blog, my blog, Introverted Insight. Been blogging from 2018. I do freelance writing, introverted writing. Been freelance writing from 2017. I've been writing. But like people be like, oh, you write so much. You do so many artsy stuff. And what was your major in high school? I did engineering. It's like, so yeah.
Go ahead.
You did engineering. I have to ask, are you good at math? Because you cannot be good at math and English. That's not fair to the world.
There are exceptions to the rule, and I am an exception to the rule. I like English more, but I did like 6-7 levels of math in UB, and I got through all of them. I'm pretty good at both, you know. Prefer English.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you're going to get back into the engineering or?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
I, I think, okay, so I got my Associate's of Science in Engineering from UB. And, you know, I chose engineering because it was challenging. I like a good challenge. Yeah, it's just like, I feel as if the engineering thing is a part of my mindset and who I am. You know, it's a lot of problem solving, critical thinking, analyzing stuff. That's just kind of who I am. So, you know, I kind of apply that into how I do my creative work, if that makes sense. Like how I structure things, I look at things from a bunch of different angles. It's like, I have an engineer's brain, but I have like an artist passion, if that makes sense. So I don't know. If I ever decide to do like school again for engineering, someone have to pay for that, like pay for everything. Yeah.
Yeah, because I know engineers make a ton load of money. So for you, it would be more so of what's driving you, like your passion more than, let's say, money.
Yeah.
I was going to ask that because you were telling me that you have a 9-to-5 job. So, and it's a lot, like it's a common trend where a lot of creatives, they have a 9-to-5 job that funds their creative passions. So that's how you feel that you've been going about.
It's very much that.
Mm-hmm. What a virtue. Very,
yeah, very 9-to-5, very freelance writing. That, like, you know, in terms of just like surviving and maintaining existence, whatever's left over, you know, it goes back to the art.
So do you see yourself making your writing a full-time job? And like, what's your timeline on that, if so?
I mean, I kind of already consider it like a full-time job. When people ask me about it, I like to lead like what I do for a living. I'd be like, oh, I work in customer service, but that's really just to fund what I really like to do, which is writing. Yeah, I consider it now a full-time thing. I mean, it's not, I wish I could just do the writing. I'm not to that point yet, but hopefully one day. But yeah, I definitely plan to just continue with my writing career, release some more poetry stuff, do some more visual things, slowly but surely move into doing some like novels and some memoirs and stuff of that nature. But yeah, like this writing thing, it's what I'm here to do. So yeah.
Okay, so to give our audience a little insight into the type of writing you do, what genres do you mainly focus on?
Okay. When it comes to blogging, I like to blog about music. I love like hip hop, alternative, pop music. Some people say white people music. I say pop music, that's fine. When it comes to blogging, I like to talk about lifestyle stuff, just different thoughts and stuff like dating, stuff like mental health. And I like to do short stories, which is basically real life events just told in a very interesting way. My poetry is normally centered around stuff like the afterlife, existentialism, mental health, romance here and there. Yeah. I like to ask like the deeper, darker questions. When it comes to my writing, I have a very acquired sense of humor, I would say.
Like, I'm not a poetry fanatic, and I'm not knocking it by any means. It's kind of like, you know how people go to art galleries, and they're like, oh, I see so much meaning in this painting, and I'm like, I have you see something?
How I see poetry, or at least how I see my poetry, or at least how it differs for a lot of people who are just, like, you know, writing words. I like to describe my poetry as just like cleverly disguised pop songs. Like if you read my poetry, it's like kind of catchy. It always has some kind of rhyme to it. And, you know, it's very, it's I guess it's deep and stuff, but it's not like, it's not inaccessible. You know what I mean? It relates to things that you could easily pick up and, you know, relate to. What I like to do is kind of like, I know when I'm consuming something, I prefer to read something that is short and sweet and something that I would want to revisit over and over again to like uncover more things, more details that I may have missed the first time, as opposed to something long and drawn out. So like the average poetry book would have like 40 poems in it. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of writing. But my poetry books would normally have something around anywhere from like 6 to 16 poems. And even 16 poems is like a lot. So mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I like things that are easily, readily consumable and, you know, things that you could relate to and want to read over and over again. Short, sweet, and to the point, basically.
So has your writings been like what accepted by the Bahamian public? Because I know you said like it was number one in Latin America and the Caribbean, but like the Bahamas specifically, have you seen a good return?
From the people, how it happens is that a lot of people who were fans of my blog, they kind of just like be like, oh, he's doing poetry now. Let's see what this is about. You know, it resonates with a good amount of people here. I have some supporters and stuff. So, I would say for now, the bulk comes from, it's like split between persons in the US and then, you know, people back here in the Bahamas. So it's a good mix.
You stopped blogging?
Listen, since I started this 9 to 5, I have not touched my blog. Like to say, put out a blog post since probably last year, July. I am looking, and that's terrible. I'm looking to get back into it, but life, man, you just be so tired and planning and scheduling posts and all that stuff. I have to get back into it. I definitely plan to get back into it later this year, probably after sometime after April, when things with freelancing calm down a bit. Yeah, I miss blogging. I really do.
So you'd say working 9 to 5 has really like affected your creativity?
It has limited in some points. Mostly like a physical thing. Like sometimes I have the intention to say, okay, you know, I'm leaving work on time today. Let me go home. Let me flesh out some stuff. Let me do some creative stuff. But my body is just like, what you talking about? And you just end up going to sleep and then you wake up the next morning and you're just like, wow, I really have to go back to work again. So yeah, it's definitely some delays. It's definitely some delays. What had happened with when I was putting together the Litmus Paper Blue, the new poetry chapbook, I was actually off from work because I caught COVID. So I got some time off from work. And in that time, you know, kind of on my dying bed, I was still doing like, I was just like, wow, this is a good opportunity to do some creative work. So yeah, that's how the poems kind of came together. That time away from work gave me the opportunity to like put together what I needed to and get it out there. So yeah, the 9 to 5 thing is definitely, it takes away.
Okay, so based on your accomplishments, I am wondering, like, how old are you? Because, you know, like the previous persons we had, you know, they gave us a lot of you know, content about what they're doing, what they've done, their accomplishments. But I feel like our audience needs to know, like, you guys are young and you are doing so much right now. So just imagine how much more, you know, creatives we could have if people understand that it's the young people out here doing it now. Like, you guys are making your own way in this little country. And a lot of times we kind of limit ourselves by saying, you know, this is just Nassau. You have to go to the States to blow up and get recognized. But here you are right now, you know, having so much accomplishments when it comes to your work. So I don't know if you want to reveal that, but I feel like a lot of people need to, you know, kind of understand that young people need their help, and young people are out here doing the work, the necessary work that needs to be done, but they just need more, you know, recognition and support from their own people.
No. You're talking sense. You're making sense. I guess spirit-wise, I feel like a 70-year-old man. But in reality, I am just, I'm 24, gonna be 25 in October. Ooh, cute existential crisis. But yeah, I definitely agree with you. It's the young people, it's definitely Gen Z who are just making waves in this country. And I encourage and I implore my fellow creatives to just get out there and do it. The worst thing you could do is try to hold out on giving the world your gift and sharing that with the world. You may think that, oh, I'm not ready, or, you know, nobody is going to care for this because we're in the Bahamas. I need to do this and I need to do that. I need to move to the US. I need to move to LA or so to be able to, for my work to be seen and recognized and stuff like that. And I get that it can be very, very discouraging. And you put so much time and effort into creating content and, you know, sharing those parts of you, and you don't necessarily get the immediate feedback or the immediate like response that you would like, but the race isn't for the swift. I know it's such a cliche thing to say, but it's honestly not for the swift. I could remember when I first started blogging, the views weren't there, and you know, but I stuck with it. And after a few months, you know, I used to get like hundreds of views and stuff for things I post and people giving me feedback and commenting and stuff like that. So it takes definitely a longer time to, I guess, garner that kind of traction and support. But I feel as if you got to focus on the mission and not on the metrics. Don't hurt your head too much about the numbers and the figures and the stats and stuff like that. And another thing I realized is that in Bahamian society, especially in like this artistic sphere, the creative community is still a developing thing. And Bahamians have this tendency of, they will watch everything you do, but it's a lesser percentage of Bahamians who would actually reach out to you and like offer an encouraging word or say, well, I really like your content. I like what you create. Keep doing your thing, that kind of stuff. But people are always watching what you're doing. That's the main thing to keep in mind. So you may think that nobody's watching what you're doing, but people are watching and they're taking recognition. So, you know, go out there and do the do a nanny do. Do your do a nanny do. Like only you could do. Honestly, that's my advice to creatives here in the Bahamas, especially like Gen Z. We are amazing and we are breaking barriers. So yeah, I hope that was a sufficient response.
It definitely was. And literally, you sounded like a 70-year-old man. So you gave us
that.
Thank
you. See that?
Honestly. But I know you spoke about, you know, just writing and how the pandemic really spurred and brought out that that artistic side of you. Like it really made you throw yourself into it. But when you were younger, was there any implications that, hey, this is my thing, I really want to get into writing? Or did it only spark when the pandemic came about?
No, I would say my like main interest in writing came a little, I think high school really sparked things. Literature class, I remember getting
real. Who was your favorite teacher?
My English teacher, Miss Yonette Duff. I have two like favorite teachers. My math teacher, Mrs. Michelle Peters. Oh my God. Those two.
Shout out. Mm-hmm. Shout out. Mm-hmm. Let them know you out here doing things.
Hi, Miss Peters. I love you.
But yes, go on. Tell us about it.
Especially in English class, literature. I remember just being in grade 11, reading like Bacalam. Bacalam was the book they gave us to read at the time. And I just remember we got like a lot of assignments and essays and stuff like that. And I just remember writing and, you know, I wasn't always as good as I am now. That's why people, it's like, you have to take time to work and develop your craft, because my English teacher, Ms. Duff, she used to work with me because there used to be a lot of words I used to like misuse. And I used to make up words sometimes when I didn't really know anything. Because sometimes I used to just write. I used to have like the dictionary app open on my phone. Yes, I have a dictionary app on my phone.
Listen, I get the whole journalism degree and I can't spell for nothing. But don't tell nobody that.
Oh, gee.
Autocorrect is weak.
I don't use autocorrect. I take autocorrect off my phone. But if I get a new phone, I'm taking off autocorrect because I like to challenge myself to learn how to spell new words and stuff like that. I know. But just used to be in a dictionary, finding a lot of words and stuff like that and using them incorrectly. Some of the stuff used to like teach me, and she's just like, you know, not every sentence needs to have 3 and 4 big words and stuff like that. So, you know, diction and stuff like that, I learned to use more sparingly and more wisely over time. And yeah, that just kind of kept going and going and going. But from like, I would say having, because she was somewhat of a mentor to me, I could remember even being at UB and, you know, visiting her sometimes when I had like a free period or something like that. And she would ask me, she was just like, you don't want to take my place to become an English teacher? At the time, I was just like, English teacher? Children? What? But I don't know. I kind of see something like that for me, like further down the line. But I told myself if I ever decided to like do the whole English teacher thing, it'd probably have to be at like the college level. But yeah, I would say high school, writing those poems, not those poems, those essays about Z. Edgell's Back Alarm, that kind of sparked something in me with the whole writing thing. And also in English class, we had to do the paper one, BGCSE, where you had to like write a short story. I used to take my lunchtime, especially like in the 12th grade leading up to the exam. I used to go in Miss Duff class. I used to beg Miss Duff. I said, Miss Duff, time me. I'm going to write lunch was like 40 minutes. I used to take 40 minutes and write out a short story. We used to have like these old BGCSE papers and we had different prompts and stuff like that. And like 2 to 3 times out of the week, I in a classroom lunchtime, I don't but eat, nothing like that. And I just write these stories and I'd let her create it and be like, Miss Duff, what would you give this? Miss Duff, what would you give that? So
that poor teacher, yeah. They don't get paid enough for you to be bothering her during her lunchtime.
I know, right? Miss Duff was like, I want to eat too, you know.
I literally used to ask, I just said, Miss Duff, what you have for lunch today? And then we just used to go and she used to go through it. Yeah. But it worked out. I got like an A on BGCSE, English. So that was cool. It worked out.
I hope she got a little compensation from off of that A. I feel like number one, teachers do not get paid what they're supposed to be paid.
I agree.
Let's just get that out of the way. But number two, when you see a teacher putting in the work and her students reflecting the work she's putting in, and it's more than exceptional, I think those teachers should get a raise. Like every A should be like $100 to the salary, because when that teacher puts in the work for the students to actually excel, that means later on in the future, our country benefits from those students because of that one teacher.
I agree.
You know, I mean, not one teacher, but that particular teacher. And so with that being said, and, you know, the joyous times you even say now that you experience in a class like that, because trust me, I did not have the same experience. My teachers were good, but English wasn't I don't know how the heck I got into this major, because English was not my strong subject. But anyways, that's another story for another time. But in your opinion, what do you think our educational system could do to kind of ramp up the creative side inside, you know, the young students? Because you talk about eventually wanting to be a teacher, well, somewhat of a tutor person overlooking children. I don't know. I can't do that type of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You just use 10 words for one word.
I don't know, because I mean, they're
answer
different.
The question,
they're different. My question would be, what do you think needs to be, what needs to be in place for students to kind of excel in their creative arts, you know, because a lot of times we put so much emphasis on math, English, blah, 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 blah. And we talk about rejecting the technical aspects of education. So in your opinion, what can we do, parents, teachers, government, ministers, what can we do to better our children's artistic side?
I think that some kind of reform to the school structures we have over here, alongside like a overhaul of the curriculum. I feel like a lot of stuff that we are learning, that students are learning, things that I've learned back then, but they're still learning now, is very redundant, especially when you come out into the real world. A lot of students leave high school feeling lost, not sure what they want to do. So they go to like UB or whatever university, get into a major, not sure what they want to do, because like what their passionate side or what they don't even discover their passion. They just, a lot of cases, students just end up doing what their parents think, what they think their parents would want them to do when it comes to like choosing majors and stuff like that. I don't agree with everybody doing the same thing. Like, all of us got to learn about Christopher Columbus. Like, it's, I think that there needs to be some kind of reform to the curriculum. I feel as if we need to look into establishing special schools, if that makes sense, like a school for music, a school for theater, a school for art, a school for literature. Like, we need to focus more on tapping into different areas of interest and making a curriculum centered around that specific niche, I guess. I feel as if I was in school and my curriculum was more concentrated on stuff like, you know, writing poetry, creative writing, and stuff like that, I would be much further ahead, I guess, creatively, artistically, in my indie author career. I would be like much further ahead than I am now. But yeah, we need to start identifying these gifts and these talents in children from a younger age, and start letting them grow in their craft. And yeah, that's what we need to do. We need to look into creating specialized curriculum and creating specialized schools to cater to different talents and different passions. Because if you could develop that kind of thing from an early age, like, people would be unstoppable, honestly.
Yeah, I could definitely like agree and even relate to, because for example, Shanae and I went to the same high school and our experiences are different, because like for me, I like the English teacher that I had when I first went to that high school, she wasn't a bad teacher. It was just that she did not encourage creativity. It was all, oh, you're getting ready for BCSE, so do this and do that. Right. And you have to follow this criteria. You can't go off of that. And it kind of like going from a school where I was reading like 3, 4, 5 books in a week, being encouraged to do creative writing outside of literature, outside of English. So we did all three, like you had an option, you know? I don't think we have that option in a lot of schools. And it kind of discourages people, because it's like, instead of being told, okay, that is cool, but that's not what is for BGCSEs, you're told, oh, don't do that. And you're kind of told like to avoid doing it, because that's not the correct or the correct way to do it. It was very discouraging. So I think, I don't think that we really, I mean, I agree, there should be special schools if we could afford it. But I think an easier way to do it is just to, for teachers to be a lot more understanding, and to even just have one class period for creative writing, to just write out your feelings, or to write out, to draw some art, you know, instead of just having like art class, having writing, just one period where you're allowed to do whatever you want to do creatively.
Okay, so yeah, the first question that I wanted to ask was, what type of poems do you write?
Okay. My poems are based on personal experiences, romance, like I said, mental health, life and death, existentialism. It's some light things, and then there's some dark things to it. There's a darkness to it.
It's hilarious to ask this, but like, do they follow a format? Like, you know how like there's haikus and then there's different types of poems, like, or just you just write freestyle?
It's,
or do you have any rhyming in your poems, like stuff like that?
All my poems rhyme. I'm slowly growing out of that and exploring new things, but like I said, I describe my poems as cleverly disguised pop songs. It's like there's always like a chorus or some kind of hook. There's always some kind of refrain. The lyrics are gonna rhyme in some way or form. There's always gonna be some kind of pattern. It's almost like it's very rhythmic, I would say. So yeah, that's like my style now. It's changing and growing into different things each day. But the main part is like, it's like pop music, a nice alternative pop song. Yeah.
Okay, so let's say I am just like probably many other audiences, our viewers, they have never heard of Taran. They now know that Taran posts some blog. Well, he used to, but he's gonna get back into it.
It's
but
still there.
Yeah, but you stopped. You said you stopped.
A lot of content still there.
Okay, so the content is still there, right? Mm-hmm. But for our audience, who have been intrigued by your story, where in the world can they find this gem of art that you've placed somewhere on this earth?
Okay.
What platform do you use?
Okay. My website, which includes like all my socials and my blog posts that I'm gonna update soon. It's Introverted Insight. So that's www.introverted-insight.com. You Google it. It should be like the first thing that pops up, introvertedinsight.com. You could find me on Instagram at Taran Bryce. You could find me on Facebook, even though I might delete my Facebook later into the year, at Taran Bryce. Let's see, what else do I use? YouTube, yes. Started posting poetry readings, performances, that kind of stuff on my YouTube channel, also Taran Bryce, TerranBrice. Twitter, I guess, if you want to, follow me on Twitter at introverted242. Yeah, I think that's about it. Also, my poetry books are on Amazon, available to be purchased and read and loved by you. My So-Called Quarantine and Litmus Paper Blue, available on Amazon. Just type in Taran Bryce on Amazon and they should come up. Yeah, I think that's about it.
Well, you spoke about like finding it difficult to write. So what are some of the ways that you get over writer's block?
What I try to do sometimes, which I find very, very hard, try to do a little of nothing. Sometimes you just need to slow yourself down, slow your mind down and do a little nothing. Inspiration, I would like pick up a new show on Netflix or like binge a new anime and stuff like that. Like when I was doing, I wasn't doing some writing. I was trying really hard to like push some stuff, but like the ideas and stuff just weren't flowing. And I remember just like started getting back into like retro 90s anime. Like I started binging like Pokemon, like the first season of Pokemon and a lot of Sailor Moon, and just like absorbing content in that way kind of inspired me and inspired like the work that I'm gonna release later into the year. But yeah, I would say do a little of nothing. That always helps. And music, I'm always inspired by music. So sometimes I listen to a song or something like that and I'd be like, oh, I like this. Whenever I listen to a new song or a new album, I would always like pull up the lyrics and just like read along to it. I know it sounds like such an old thing to do, but so taking in new content and just like relaxing and trying not to be so hard on myself to always be in production mode. That normally helps. And then, you know, sometimes things just hit you spur of the moment. And when little lines or something would just hit me, I just write it down immediately or just type it into my phone. And eventually more lines and more lines come in and, you know, a poem is formed. So yeah, take it easy. Do a little nothing sometimes. So that helps. That helps bring the creativity back.
Child, I remember one time we had an assignment to write a story. And I tell you, no lie, Taran, I never knew a writer's block until that day. And I could not, link two words together. So, I don't know. I wish I had that advice back then, but God have mercy. I will carry it moving forward. That I will.
So you brought a poem to read to us. So you can tell us about like the mindset you were in when you wrote the poem or poems, the name of the book that it's in, and then you could read it.
Okay. This one is called Yellow Fellow. It's from my my new poetry chapbook, Litmus Paper Blue. I did a live reading of it. It's up on my YouTube channel, Taran Bryce. This poem is basically, so the whole Litmus Paper Blue the chapbook basically chronicles a breakup that I went through recently. And it just captures like the different emotions one would feel during a breakup, anger, grief, sadness, depression, that kind of stuff. So Yellow Fellow is that moment or that stage, I would say, in recovery where you already had a few good cries and sadness is about to leave you and you're slowly slipping into anger. So it's going from calm, cool, and collected to unapologetically unhinged. A little crazy. So I hope you guys enjoy. This one is called Yellow Fellow. Your one reply to my 6 texts, hoping that you love me next. Yellow auras, citrus hues, get the feeling you like me too. But your like simply won't do. I want your love, your full attention. Treat me like your Facebook mentions. Never too busy for a post. But lately you've written me like your ghost. You go ghost, disappear, leaving me to wait right here. Like a sunflower, hope to bloom. Water me with drops of gloom. May my roots run really deep through your core, your underneath. May you love me like I love you. That is all I ask of you. Your yellow fellow is not so swallow. The 60-40 should have worked, but almost 2 years still lying down here. The brownness in your dirt, no solar power, just lonely hours. Your silence, a surrogate lover. But the morning dew, the sunrise too, they've exposed your silver cover. You're bored of me, and it shows, a little too ready to let me go. Minimal effort I requested of you, dumbing down demands for two. Still, you don't want me like how I want you. These days you're cold and candid too, but your yellow fellow just wants your hello, your monochromatic gad. My golden hue I shared with you. I am the best you ever had. Then again, you always knew I never failed at spoiling you. My time, my body, assured affection. Half return sends my direction. Now, isn't that just a crying shame? You never really felt the same. Still, I hope our vines get reconnected, babe, somehow. Still, I hope my prayers keep you protected, babe. Sundown. Today was golden, a mist light rain. Your metal laughter, my heart's refrain. And one day I hope you really do feel the same. You find the energy and won't be drained. But until such time, I'll bloom in pain and watch you rot from my window pane. Oh, and just so you know, your yellow fellow is now feeling mellow. akin to Full Tilt Insane. You shatter my heart, you deal with my art. It's time you felt my pain. So yeah, that was Yellow Fellow. I hope you guys liked it. Woo!
That was good. Very expressive.
To be an actor. I felt that.
I felt the emotions.
Like, who was she? Hello? Yes. Hi,
someone
I am.
Someone I am trying to forget about.
Oh, what is this? But I don't think her, you throwing a nag pian didn't they? We appreciate
yes, it. Yes, that was the greatest poems you read right now.
Is that a universe works, right? Okay. Okay.
Like, we should make our little jingle off of that.
Hopefully everyone enjoyed our new, very exciting topic today. Thanks to Taran for being our guest. Next week's topic will be health and wellness. We'll be focusing on vegan eating and dieting. Follow us on our socials at Candid242, and thanks for listening. Keep it real, Bahamas.